Living on Earth needs your support to be heard each week. Kindly give what you can today by using the donate link to the left of this page. Thanks.
My name is Randy Huffman. I'm the Cabinet Secretary for the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection.
Well, welcome to Living on Earth, Secretary Huffman.
Oh, thank you for having me.
What's your response to this article in Science, where a dozen or so scientists came together and looked at the cumulative impacts of mountaintop removal mining and valley fills? What did you make of that?
Well, I think that the article has to be kept in perspective. I mean, that article was really a compilation of a number of studies that had been done over the years, and it was put together in a kind of a Reader's Digest version. So it was really, there was really nothing new there. I guess that's the main, my first take on the article. There was no new science there. There were no new revelations. You know, it was a convenient way to package all of the studies that have been done, or many of the studies that have been done on surface mining, into a two-page article. I was really taken back by one of the opening comments in the article, where the wording is something to the effect of all of the mounting evidence of the adverse impacts of mountaintop mining have gone largely unnoticed or largely ignored. That comment seems to be made in ignorance, I guess is the right word to use, because there has been a tremendous amount of debate on this subject over the last 10 or 12 years. In fact, there's been litigation, lots of litigation. There's been a significant settlement agreement that came out in the early part of this decade regarding mountaintop mining, and to even hint that this debate is just now starting, or that it hasn't gone on, or this science has been ignored, is really not a very informed comment.
You point out that this is nothing new, and I think it is largely a synthesis of existing studies. The point there being, of course, the cumulative impact perhaps has not been fully taken into account. But I do think that the main author, Dr. Palmer, would say there is new science here. They took stream data, I think, from your database to pull together a lot of their conclusions from a regression study they did to look at downstream water quality impacts. Why did we have to wait for scientists from mostly outside of the state to do this kind of work? Why isn't your agency doing that sort of work?
Oh, we are doing that sort of work. We have a lot of data, as a matter of fact, a significant amount of data on downstream water quality and aquatic life and so forth. We do have that.
Right. They used your data. I'm saying, why aren't you using your data?
We are using our data. I don't understand what you're talking about.
Well, you didn't publish the paper in Science. I mean, I'm saying perhaps you have the data, but you're not really looking for the potential problems as vigorously as you might.
I guess I'm a little bit confused about the question. We are consistently doing analytical work. We're consistently looking at streams for listing on the 303D impaired list. Maybe one of the big differences is I don't necessarily have a social agenda that is in some way trying to stop coal mining or surface mining. You know, I'm not out looking for just the negative things. I've got to balance the entirety of the scope of this issue, with going back to an earlier part of our conversation where we talked about the science is what it is, but the debate is going to take place over what is the acceptable amount of impact that society is willing to tolerate for the quality of life and standard of living. I don't think that's something that these other studies have taken into consideration. Okay. I don't have the luxury of just looking at one side of it and drawing a line in the sand and say I don't have to consider those other things, because I do.
Gotcha. And just to clarify, you don't disagree. You're not saying that the findings in the science paper are incorrect.
I haven't read. Generally speaking, I will agree that there are impacts, and I would say that I'm not in a position to argue that Dr. Palmer's findings are actually wrong. I'm not a biologist, so I don't even know that I would be qualified to agree or disagree.
Mm-hmm. Have you read the paper?
No, I have not. Not hers. Not her study. I read the article that you called about today, but I haven't read her study in particular. But I have people that, I mean, I've got an agency of biologists and so forth here that do look at her work and look at the work of others, and they have lots of their own work, and they are, you know, recommend policy based upon their findings. And it's it's a slow process. It's not as an exact of a science as some may portray it to be. Mm-hmm. To be quite honest with you.
But the paper that appeared in Science, you did or did not read it?
Yes, the 2-page article.
Okay, you're talking about all the supporting studies that went behind it. You haven't got around to reading, or that's what?
I haven't read those.
Okay, thank you.
I just read the what was handed to me. Just the article that you're talking about was mm-hmm. it was just 2 pages long, and mm-hmm. and the reference page was half of that, I think.
A couple of quotes here. Current attempts to regulate mountaintop mining and valley fill practices are inadequate. Regulators should no longer ignore rigorous science. Are regulators ignoring rigorous science?
No, not at all. I think that there's a couple things here. This is as much a political debate as it is a scientific one, for various reasons, and we don't really have time to get into all that today. But to a large degree, the nature of the regulatory business is that it will always be playing catch up with the activities that are happening out there on the ground. Carbon capture is a good example. We've been emitting CO2 for years, not really thinking of it as a problem until recently, and now we're looking at technologies for how we can capture that, pull it out of the waste stream, and not emit it into the atmosphere. And to a large degree, anything that we regulate is that way. Coal mining is no different. We don't believe that the Surface Mining Act, as it was passed in 1977, anticipated surface mining activities being as large as they are today. Hmm. So to a degree, we're the regulations are always playing catch up with what's happening on the ground.
Hmm. Do you disagree with the findings in the Science article on, say, downstream water quality or the other individual impacts?
Every human activity has an impact.
Right,
and,
right, right.
And so I do not disagree at all with the fact that there are impacts from coal mining. I don't disagree that there are adverse impacts from coal mining. The question that needs to be answered, and this is where the debate turns from science to politics, I think, is what is an acceptable level of impact in order to have this industrial activity take place? I mean, if you look at the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, and SMCRA, all three of those major pieces of federal legislation anticipate major industrial activities as being necessary to our quality of life in our society, in this country. So the question becomes not is there going to be an impact. The question is at what level of impact is society willing to tolerate in exchange for that quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the debate needs to take place, and that's where we're trying to go with it. So, yes, I agree that there is an impact. But we have not agreed exactly what levels of impacts are acceptable.
Right. Another point that the authors seem to be making here is that the cumulative impact of the mining sites all around a region or in a given watershed add up to something greater than can be captured by simply looking at each individual site. And it seems to me this harkens back to earlier calls for a look at the cumulative impacts, going back to the big environmental impact statement that EPA did. Is West Virginia doing that?
We are beginning to do that.
That is
really the best way to look at it. One of the problems with the Clean Water Act as it's written is that all of us as regulators have always been focused on what's coming out of the end of the pipe. That's the phrase that we use. What's coming out of the end of the pipe, and that's what we regulate. But a lot of times what comes out of the end of the pipe is not by itself in conflict with any law or rule or regulation that's on the books, but cumulatively downstream there could be an impact, an adverse impact, that still is not allowed by law, and it has to be addressed. And that's where we're really headed right now with this debate. So, yes, there is a cumulative impact. And, again, but an impact is an impact. At what point? And the question that we're trying to answer right now, at what point is the cumulative impact something that we would consider adverse versus an acceptable impact?
What do you think will be the impact of that that paper in Science, especially, you know, where the scientists here kind of step outside of the traditional role of scientists to make what many would consider a policy recommendation. They're saying essentially regulators should halt the permitting process until the permitting process more accurately reflects science.
I would argue that that's exactly what EPA has done. By stopping the mountain issuance of 404 permits, they've only issued two in the past 12 months. So those were, what else would you call it? I'm not being sarcastic. I don't mean to come off that way, but that's in essence, that's what has happened, is the 404 valley fill process has been halted.
I guess ideally you want your policy to correlate with what science is telling you. You want them to be more or less aligned. And I think what they're saying here is that's not happening. To what degree do you think your regulations, your permitting, can be justified by the science?
Well, I think, as I said before, there's always, I believe, my experience has been that there's always a lag between science and policy. Science comes first and policy follows. Science doesn't tell you what policy to make. Science just tells you the facts. Policy is then a judgment that's made based upon that science. And quite frankly, there's a lot of disagreement among the parties involved as to what the policy should be based upon the science.
So where do we see the permitting policy going from here? As I read it here with recent events, there seems to be a great deal of uncertainty. And you had a meeting recently with federal officials and industry representatives. What is the status now of West Virginia's permitting for mountaintop removal mining?
There is still a great deal of uncertainty, and that is our biggest concern. And we have said, as a state, we have said all along that certainty in any industry that you regulate is at least as important, if not more important, than what the policy itself is. And so, you know, we are less concerned about the policy today than we are about bringing regulatory certainty back into the regulatory climate. So we are, as a state, the EPA is not giving us any clear guidance. We think we generally understand what they are looking for. We generally agree that what they are looking for is something that should be considered. Again, we're heading in that direction. I think we've slowly been heading in that direction anyway, and so we're going to pick up our pace in the state here, in the state DEP. We're going to pick up pace at establishing a good regulatory framework that we think will bring some stability, and we're going to work with EPA in the process and try to come up with a way to interpret how these downstream cumulative impacts should be measured and where the cutoffs should be and so forth. So we plan to do that. I think the longer we wait on EPA, the more unstable the regulatory climate's going to become.
In the meantime, do I understand correctly, you've sort of put a hold on permitting valley fills, the places where the rock and spoil are disposed of?
Yeah, a lot of people are viewing that as some kind of political statement. That is a practical resource allocation issue for us. What is happening is we as the uncertainty continues to mount with these large permits that have valley fills associated with them, the co-operators are in anticipation of needing to keep people working and to keep coal orders filled. They are looking for other areas to mine coal that do not require valley fills. So what we're seeing and what we think is going to continue to be an issue over the next 12 to 24 months is we're going to see the number of permit applications in this agency for mining operations that do not require valley fill permits rise significantly. And the bottom line is I don't have the resources to do both. I can't. It doesn't make any sense for me to spend hundreds of man hours, if not thousands of man hours, reviewing a permit application that contains seven or eight valley fills when we really don't know what that permit's going to look like at the end anyway, because we don't have any of those, any of the framework in place. You know, and in the meantime, these same co-operators, they want permits to do these other projects so they can keep working. And it's just a resource allocation issue.
I see. Let me ask a question that goes a little beyond just the permitting process and whatnot, but why does West Virginia need mountaintop removal coal mining? I understand why you need coal mining, but why this particular method of mining? It doesn't necessarily employ more people. In fact, you can argue it employs fewer people than other forms of mining. It clearly is the most damaging form of mining. Why do you need to do it this way?
Well, that's a good question. I think if you would, it depends on who you ask. Most of our mountaintop mining is done in the majority of it's in limited to six or seven counties in the southern part of the state, and those are the counties that have the very steep terrain. And I think if you were to ask the people who are responsible for running those counties, who are responsible for providing fire and police protection, and if responsible for providing funding for schools, the county commissioners and so forth, in those counties, they would tell you that mountaintop mining is their lifeblood. Now, in the scope of the in the big picture of things, is there enough coal coming from the mountaintop mining operations in southern West Virginia to make a difference in the world? Maybe not. But if you're a county commissioner in Logan County and that is your world, then it becomes the difference between being able to keep the schools open and not. And that's what we hear, you know, from the coal fields and the leaders of the coal fields is, you know, this accounts for the majority of our coal production. And the severance taxes are our lifeblood. And I'm not making any judgments about whether that's right or wrong. I'm just telling you that's those are facts. Those are what we hear. And could they get the coal some other way? Some of it they could. It is a destructive form of mining. It's when you're talking about mining coal in steep slopes, that's the whole reason for needing so many valley fills is because you can't stack the overburden back up because the terrain is just too steep.
When they're done, what are those southern counties going to be left with? I mean, you're talking about grandchildren who aren't going to have streams to fish or swim in. You're talking about water supplies that look very vulnerable, in fact, already contaminated to the point of being unhealthy in various places.
That's a generalized statement that is not a fair assessment of what's happening in these six or seven counties that I'm talking about. You will be able to find contaminated wells. You'll be able to find a stream or two. You'll be able to find impacts if you look. But it's not a fair statement to assess the environment as being in that kind of condition across the coal fields. That's just simply not true. And contrary to what people think, this mining practice is not leveling West Virginia. We're not filling in all the streams. Yes, there's an impact. Yes, maybe it's larger than it should be, but it's not. We're not talking about deforesting the entire and the entirety of seven counties in West Virginia for the sake of one shot at the coal. Mm-hmm. But with all that said, there are improvements that need to be made, and that's what we're looking at doing.
Right, but the local economic benefits are really not all that apparent. We're still talking about some of the most poverty-stricken, economically distressed places in the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, if not for a few spots of the Mississippi Delta and a few Indian reservations, these, I'm guessing, would be the most economically distressed, among the most economically distressed places in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the real benefit for the majority of the people there, given the damage that is being extracted?
That's a good question. Those are social issues that get mm-hmm. beyond my area of expertise. I think that the mistake that has been made with coal mining is we waited too long in the history of mining before we started requiring significant amounts of severance taxes and things like that. I mean, the coal mining has been going on for a long time. We have just recently been collecting the severance taxes and requiring the reclamation and all of those things that should have been done from the beginning. I've argued all along that from the 30s and 40s, if we would have required coal mining to put back infrastructure, we would have solved a lot of the problems that we're dealing with on a social level even still today. And that's what we need to do is coal mining needs to give back and build infrastructure roads, sewer, water, taxes. That's has been happening for quite a while, and we're looking at and we're seeing that happen more frequently now.
Okay. Well, I think we've covered the questions I had in mind. Are there things we've missed you think we should talk about?
Oh, we could go on and on. this is an interesting debate, and there's a there's a lot to it. I guess the thing I want to leave you with. Maybe there's a lot of things I could leave you with. I want to reemphasize that my role here is as a regulator. This agency's role is as a regulator, but we are. We have the responsibility of balancing the regulatory requirements with the intent of these federal acts, which is the anticipation that there will be industrial activities take place in this state and in this country. So, I will always view the economic impacts of our decisions as important as the environmental impacts, because I think that's what that's how these federal acts were designed. And a lot of people don't appreciate that position that I take. They think that I should be totally focused on the environment and let the economics worry about themselves. When I see people that need work, that don't have work, I just can't let that go. That's critically important to me as an individual, and as a cabinet member, it has to be important to me. And the argument from either side is usually, and the debate over mountaintop mining or any kind of mining, is usually done from the perspective of a person that's on one side or the other. And I don't think the argument can be boiled down to something that simple.
Randy Huffman, Secretary of West Virginia's Department of Environmental Protection, thanks for your time.
You're welcome, Jeff. Thank you.